Before I begin, I want to kind of put back into memory, remember where we were at in the book of Deuteronomy, and we were in the 21st chapter. And there's an awful lot of this one in the second chapter, next chapter, a lot of what we would call rules, laws, regulations, and how to do things. And to our society today, these things sound extremely weird in our world today. Wherever you're at in the face of the earth, they just look weird and strange and have no idea why they're even there for, and most societies totally ignore it. But in the fourth chapter of Deuteronomy, I want to read something from it, if you don't mind, just to have a second. That's where the whole thing begins to begin. He said, Now, O Israel, listen to the statutes and judgments which I teach you to observe, that you may live and go and possess the land which the Lord your God of your fathers has given you. You will not add to the word which I command you, nor will you take anything from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Lord and your God which I command you. It goes on down and it says, be careful to observe them, for this is your wisdom, your understanding in the sight of the people who will hear all these statutes and say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. That's a big mouthful, isn't it? I want to take you back on time before we read the 21st chapter. Kind of put yourself, if you can, in the shoes of Moses. And kind of make yourself, at this point in time, Moses. Place yourself in Moses' shoes and see what may be taking place. There, you are at the foot of this mountain, along with the people. You hear for the first time, as they heard for the first time, the Ten Commandments. Both you and they are fearful. They are more fearful than you. And when Elohim said that it is good that they are fearful of him. Now Elohim called you up to teach you what you are to teach them. You are once again being called by Elohim. What you do not yet know is what Elohim is going to teach you. You are there for 40 days. During your stay, Elohim writes the same words that he spoke on tablets of stones. You take them down. At the end of 40 days, I'm reading this. This is not, I'm trying to picture yourself as you're Moses. You take them down at the end of 40 days because Elohim is now angry with the people. You see the golden calf and you get angry yourself and you break the tablets of stone. Now, this very first set of stones, the creator of heaven and earth, cut out and wrote on them these tablets of stone are now forever gone. And then Elohim calls you back up to the mountain again. Well, this time you have to cut out new tablets of stone. So you go back up and spend another 40 days learning something more. You come back down with the tablets of stone. And your face glows. And the people are afraid of you. You do not see yourself and wonder what is taking place. The second visit you saw the backside of Elohim. He tells you exactly what he is going to do and what he does and does not hide anything from you. You now have complete understanding of the creator of heaven and earth. That's a pretty powerful picture, doesn't it? So when we go back now and we find out he's going to give us some more statutes, judgments, and commandments, you have to kind of put yourself in Moses' shoes for a moment. Now you understand. The people don't. It's not because the people are dumb. He just said, I speak to them in parables. I speak to them in visions. I speak to them in dreams. But to you, I speak to you plainly. You know exactly what I am thinking and what I am doing. You remember those words? So we're here at this particular point, and there's a really unusual chapter. And chapter 22 and 23, there's certain rules of laws, and you try to figure out, where does that fit in today's society? So I need a reader for chapter 21.
If in the land that the Lord your God has given you to possess, someone is found slain, lying in the open country, and it is not known who killed him, then your elders and your judges shall come out, and they shall measure the distance to the surrounding cities. And the elders of the city that is nearest to the slain man shall take a heifer that has never been worked and that is not pulled in a yoke. And the elders of that city shall bring the heifer down to a valley with running water, which is neither plowed nor sown, and shall break the heifer's neck there in the valley. Then the priests and the sons of Levi shall come forward, for the Lord your God has chosen them to minister to him and to bless in the name of the Lord. And by their word every dispute and every assault shall be settled. And all the elders of that city nearest to the slain man shall wash their hands over the heifer whose neck was broken in the valley. And they shall testify, our hands did not shed this blood, nor did our eyes see it shed. Accept atonement, O Lord, for your people Israel, whom you have redeemed, and do not set the guilt of innocent blood in the midst of your people Israel, so that their blood guilt be atoned for. So you shall purge the guilt of innocent blood from your midst, when you do what is right in the sight of the Lord. When you go out to war against your enemies, and the Lord your God gives them into your hand, and you take them captive, and you see among the captives a beautiful woman, and you desire to take her to be your wife, and you bring her home to your house, she shall shave her head and pare her nails. And she shall take off the clothes with which she was captured, and shall remain in your house and lament her father and her mother a full month. After that, you may go into her and be her husband, and she shall be your wife. But if you no longer delight in her, you shall let her go where she wants. But you shall not sell her for money, nor shall you treat her as a slave, since you have humiliated her. If a man has two wives, the one loved and the other unloved, and both the loved and the unloved have borne him children, and if the firstborn son belongs to the unloved, then on the day when he assigns his possessions as an inheritance to his sons, he may not treat the son of the loved as the firstborn in preference to the son of the unloved, who is the firstborn. But he shall acknowledge the firstborn, the son of the unloved, by giving him a double portion of all that he has, for he is the firstfruits of his strength. The right of the firstborn is his. If a man has a stubborn and rebellious son, who will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and though they discipline him, will not listen to them, then his father and his mother shall take hold of him and bring him out to the elders of his city at the gate of the place where he lives. And they shall say to the elders of his city, This our son is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard. Then all the men of that city shall stone him to death with stones. So you shall purge the evil from your midst, and all Israel shall hear and fear. And if a man has committed a crime punishable by death, and he is put to death, and you hang him on a tree, his body shall not remain all night on the tree, but you shall bury him the same day, for a hanged man is cursed by God. You shall not defile your land that the Lord your God has given you for an inheritance.
It's kind of an interesting chapter, isn't it? Very unusual or odd or, let's put it this way, bizarre in our world. So let's do a talking about some of this stuff. Now, the very first one is someone who's been murdered. And they haven't found out who did the killing. There's no forensic stuff in those days. And so lo and behold, they had to find out where is the nearest town. It's out in the country. Who's the nearest town? And both the elders and the judges of that area are to come and do something. What are they supposed to do? Why break the neck of a heifer? I'm sorry, what? Okay, what's the purpose of breaking the heifer's neck? Why not another animal? Why not a sheep? Why not a rabbit? Why not a donkey? Why not something else? Why a heifer that has not had a yoke on it? Yes.
Well, for one thing, a heifer is a young cow. She has never been bred. She has never had a calf. She's never given milk. She is full of potential, and she is totally a loss. When this person was murdered, nobody knows what their potential was. They were cut off during their life without God doing the cutting off by someone who stopped. It's a picture. I know there's also a red heifer that's a picture of a sacrifice.
Because death has taken place.
But it's a loss. Tragic loss.
Okay. What was the second thing they were supposed to do? They had to break the heifer's neck near flowing water. Not a well, flowing water. And after they have done their ceremony, if I use that terminology, they make a statement that they are not. And therefore, they are to do something. They are to wash their hands. Now, isn't that really odd? Why do they need to wash their hands? Because it got dirty? Sorry, what?
Their hands didn't do it.
Nor anyone in the city which they live in will be held accountable. Really? Well, that's what it says. Now, we can look back and say, you know, we know God knows who murdered them, right? Why didn't just God move in and say, that's the one, go get him or her? He doesn't. They're entering into a new land, a new area. Now, these are one of those weird statutes. This is what you're going to do. Why would God do that? Let them have that judgment, have that thinking, and what to do about it when, hey, why not just ask the priest? Well, you know, the priests don't have an answer either. They're supposed to do something. What are the priests supposed to do? If there's a dispute, what are they supposed to do? They're what?
Settle it.
They are to settle it. And you're not to say, but the priest, that they're talking about. You can't do that. Why is that important that the priest must make the final decision? Why?
Vengeance is mine, says the Lord.
You got it. So we have here, the priest is representing the Messiah, or the functions of the Messiah, and all of a sudden now, he knows who did what. Now the people of the city will not be harmed or damaged or be cursed with a curse, because the elders of the city did what God wanted them to do. They couldn't find who or how the person died. Couldn't it be killed by a total stranger? You know, no one knows, but God does. But the dispute would be handled by the priest himself. Now, there's one more thing that this is supposed to do. What else is it supposed to do? It's a key word in this thing. An atonement will be provided on their behalf of the blood. The heifer winds up being the atonement. What's the heifer about? Really odd thing, isn't it? But what the heifer supposed to do? Why a heifer? Why a cow? It doesn't make sense to us. Have you ever thought about that? You know, we know about the red heifer. Of course, probably all of them are red heifers. But nonetheless, you're at a point where it's a association with death. Now, God doesn't want to mess around being around death, right? He doesn't like dead things. He likes living things. And so he kills a heifer because of death. What do you say here now? On behalf of the blood. Our hands have not shed this blood, nor have our eyes seen it. In other words, you didn't see anybody do it. We couldn't find anybody who did it. And so they put their entire trust into, they had to say to God first, then they had to put their entire trust into the priesthood. Let the priest make the final statement. That's very odd, isn't it? Don't you think it's odd? But do you think we would do it today? Do you think even Israel will do it today? No, it's a weird commandment. Forget it. Throw it out. What was the purpose of this?
It's to, I think it's so that the people understand that this is not the way we do things. We don't just randomly go around killing people. And the elders of the city are saying, God, we didn't have anything to do with this man's death. Please forgive us that we don't have the way to be able to bring this man to murderer to justice, because we just don't know where to go, where the leads are. We just can't do this. Forgive us for this man's death. We don't condone this in any way, shape, or form. It's a way of absolving themselves from any knowledge of what happened to him.
Okay. What happens when you don't do that? A city doesn't do that. What goes on? It's called cold cases in our modern terminology. It stays on forever and forever and forever. What?
Well,
go ahead.
There's a curse that comes into it, because blood on your land, you're responsible for it. I think of those two Christian kids that were out at the coast years ago that were shot and they were murdered. Nobody ever found out who it was. Had that small community done this and said, Father, it's upon you. I don't know who did it, but I believe God would have come closer to addressing it, because they had said, God, this is, we can't do this. You have to take care of it. That's a big deal. Publicly.
So keep the land purified.
Like right now I was listening to the radio, because I don't have the news, but now there's a law that they wanted to appeal the death penalty and have imprisonment in life imprisonment. So, and I started thinking, you know, look at all the unresolved crime when you have know that they did it, you've seen it, and you have a witness, everything's there. And then that guy that did, Manson, he just came up for parole again, and they know that he did it. And I just started thinking, we're housing, like it is a defilement, like she said, the curse is that there isn't a bit, you know, a consequence steep and scary enough for us. Now I don't know if that plays into that, having a place to go, but, you know, it's kind of a mess. Yeah, there's not consequences.
When you put our history, go ahead.
Something like that, our society is so full of blood that, like the incident Ellie was talking about earlier, those two young hikers, tourists, you know, that were camping on the beach and all that, and they get killed. You know, our society has become so callous to these cold cases, to these unsolved murders and this kind of thing, that we have desensitized ourselves to death. And so if you have a society that lives this way, you reduce the risk of society being desensitized to a death, because if every time there's an unsolved, unknown murder, and the city, the elders of the city have to kill an animal or whatnot, and have to publicly say, we had nothing to do with this man's death, we're sorry this man is dead, we don't, but it's out of our hands, we don't know how to solve, you know,
we
this crime.
We can't solve the crime.
I think it would go a long way into making death more meaningful and giving us more of an understanding what death actually is, because we are so desensitized to it now that our hearts have gotten
the life of an animal was taken for the blood that was shed.
To me, on top of that, she thinks she's Tammy's absolutely right, but as well that when there is a crime and something happens and this instance occurs, somebody's dead, they don't know who did it. If it costs the city something, they are more inclined to try to investigate it.
Correct.
Versus if it costs you nothing. Right. They say, oh, some dead guy there. I don't know who did. Anybody else? No. Okay. Bury him. That costs the city very little.
Interesting way to put it.
Versus, nope. All right. Get all the city elders together. Stop what you're doing. Go buy a heifer from somebody else who has one. It'll cost you money. A very expensive, very highly valuable one. Bring it out. Slaughter it. Break his neck. I do not know who breaks the neck, but it's questionable who breaks it.
But the elders are supposed to do it.
So they have to do it. They have to be right there. It costs them their time. It costs them, obviously, cash to do so. And, of course, they're doing this in front of a high priest of God and swearing that they had nothing to do with it. That costs something out of them.
With the priest was there also.
Right, but it costs
something out
of it. It takes some effort to do something.
Right. Yeah.
It's not a, oh, you know what, I could investigate or I could go play golf game. You know what, tee times in 10 minutes... just bury the guy and move on. Well, that gains nothing to a society. As Taylor pointed out, it's completely callous as a society to all death.
Well, plus, in addition to that, the elders are swearing that no one in their city had anything to do with it.
Correct.
So, I mean, if you just make that flippantly, wow.
False oath.
Because you're using the name of the Lord in this case. Okay. Now, why running water? The what? Hose it away. Wash it clean. Purify it with water. All right. Now, second thing here, we're going to try if I can't get this down as fast as I can. Yes.
Verse 8, you know, where there's a prayer afterwards. Be merciful, Lord, unto thy people Israel, whom thou hast redeemed, and lay not innocent blood unto thy people of Israel's charge, and the blood shall be forgiven them. We think about all the innocent unborn, you know, how can we be redeemed from any of that? It's just incredible, our country, and even Israel, too, you know, they're doing the same thing. Anything that we do, they do the same thing, killing the unborn. And now they're making it so, this is off the subject, but nurses...
But, this is our country and our society is different than what God had instituted to the Israelites. And so it's really hard for us to look back and compare ourselves with the Israelites when we are not. We're studying a nation of people that God gave these instructions to. I do believe they probably did an awful lot of this stuff. I don't think it was just a mundane thing. I think they did find a murderer, or they did exactly what they said the very chapter before, what to do about it. But now we have one here, they can't find the person who did the killing. You remember, you have to have two witnesses no matter what. And so in here case, they can't find it, and therefore their eyes have not seen it. They looked into it, they investigated it, they did the very best, and they couldn't find it. And now the city can be held accountable. God says, I don't want you to be held accountable. I want you to be free from this. I will find the person. I will hold charge the person, and you are free from it. But the teaching to people, the leadership of these cities, how to observe, how to pay attention, what to do, and learn to make the right judgment. Learn to make the right judgment. Don't make assumptions. The previous chapter says you must have two witnesses before you take a person's life. Now we're running into this with, we have a dead person, no witnesses. No one knows who did it. What do you do in that case? Do this. And your city will appear. God will protect your city. And you will have great understanding. Great understanding. I'm going to run out of time here real quickly. I want to go to, let's see, what do I want to go to? Interesting thing about if the man has two wives, and the second, the one of the wives, the firstborn son, is from the unloved wife. Now, we cannot take and make a decision, oh, I don't like that son. Not an issue with God. He is going to get twice as much as the other son would have gotten. Period. Point blank. Now, are they both the firstborn of the womb? Yes, but not technically, biblically speaking. We've talked about that before. It's very, very clear here. In verse 16, then it shall be that the day he, that is the father, bequeaths his possessions to his sons, that he must not bestow firstborn status on the son of the loved one. He must do it upon the unloved one, the true firstborn. Which is verse 17. But he shall acknowledge the son of the unloved wife as the firstborn by giving him a double portion, all that he has. For he, that firstborn son of the unloved woman, is the beginning of the father's strength. He has the right of the firstborn. That doesn't happen in our society, does it? It's weird. We have laws in our country. Now, I'm not saying, we're not Israel, but we have laws that now you go to court, you can sue, you get your share, you can scrape the share. It has to be equally distributed amongst everybody, but not with God. So we know that took place. Did it happen in Israel? I believe it did in their history. I don't think they just ignored it. I think they really did give double portions to the one who was the firstborn of the father in this particular case. We read that in the book of Genesis about, and his firstborn son, which was whom? Yeah. His firstborn son was? Yes. And he said, you are my strength, you are my excellency, you are my, I can't remember the other words on it, but it's the beginning. Remember I told you what the word son really means in Hebrew. Okay? Doesn't mean what we think it means. Now, I find a couple of things very fascinating. Now, we had this washing of hands, right? Now, another thing comes on this thing, which is very interesting. We have a rebellious son here. Right? Now, verse 20 is a very fascinating thing, and they will tell the elders of the city, this son of ours is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard. Does that sound familiar?
The parable of the two sons, huh?
The Messiah was called a rebellious and, what was the other one? Rebellious and
glutton.
Stubborn, stiff-necked, put it that way, and a glutton and a wine-bibber.
Yeah,
boy, did you see that? So that's one of the most worst accusations you can say. And that's what took place. Now, what happened? Well, he got stoned. He got killed. You understand that one. But we go on one more thing I find very, very fascinating. In verse 22. I've got to close this up real quick. It's almost 3 o'clock. If a man has committed a sin deserving of death, he shall be put to death. And you shall what? Hang him on a tree. Does that sound familiar? Wow. And Apostle James, Peter, says that our Lord was hung on a tree. Really? Yes.
I had a girl went through some college courses in the last couple of years. We were in a class, and she was an African-American woman anyway. She told the whole class that we didn't understand what it was because black people were always hung on a tree. And, you know, that was the most, here in the United States, that happened a lot.
Yeah.
And, you
know. Happened in the Old West, too.
The United States, you mean?
Happened in our Old West, too.
Yes, I'm saying what happened. And so she told us as a group, we didn't really understand the nature of that. But then the only way she could find comfort for herself was that Christ was hung upon a tree. But I think about that culture, the African-American being hung on the tree, that symbolism to that.
Now, don't get confused with what it says. If he has committed, okay, then you hang him on a tree. Now, innocent people have been hung before in the past, and that you cannot do much about that. God is the one that's going to keep the record. We don't know. I don't know. But I find it very interesting. And the last of this particular translation says, for he, the one who's hung on the tree, is hanged, is accursed. Oh, really? By whom? By God. So here we have. Remember what they said about him? Oh, he believes in God, have God bring him down. No, he was hung. And guess what? Our Lord and Savior was cursed by God. Ooh, that doesn't sound like a good God, does it? It's kind of interesting, this particular chapter, talk about those particular things, isn't it? Kind of find he was accused of being a rebellious, stubborn wine bibber and a drunkard. Right here in this chapter, and hanging on a tree, right here in this chapter, find that very fascinating. And an unknown murderer, the city must wash their hands. You remember somebody washing their hands? Pilate. And we judge and we condemn and we curse Pilate because he washed his hands. What did he say? I'm not guilty. But the people become guilty. So, you know, we can hate, despise, or have interpretations. I find it very fascinating. This particular chapter has got three interesting things in relationship to a death, murder, or the firstborn. Well, that's fascinating. Yes.
I had something happen to me one time that wasn't my responsibility, and I washed my hands in front of the situation, and God did not hold me responsible, and the responsibility fell on the proper party.
Yeah.
He still sees it.
All right. Any more comments? Any more thoughts? Remember, God has set these rules. Now, what's so bad about these rules? I use that word, rules. The Apostle Paul said something about the Torah. He says, it's going to condemn you. It could find you guilty. You're going to find yourself in trouble with God.
Is there something about Pilate's attitude, though, when he did that? I mean,
what was his attitude?
He was the one who could free him, so he was concerned about the people saying...
Not according to the law. He obeyed the law.
He didn't even know the law, probably.
Oh, wait a minute. He knew the law. He knew the law. He knew exactly what was required of the law.
He knew in Torah what was written here. You believe he knew Torah, what it says here?
What do you think?
No.
It's easy to condemn a man who's not of Israel, a man who's not a Jewish, that he's guilty of doing it, and he should have taken the power. No, no. What did Jesus say to him? You can do nothing. You cannot stop this death, no matter what you try. Now, is he guilty? Could he stop it? He couldn't stop it. He wouldn't allow to stop it. Jesus said, you will not stop this.
That's for him. Right, there's no power you've received that's not been given you by the Father.
Yeah, and you don't have the power to stop this.
I don't know that that was the next words out of Jesus' mouth.
Yes, it was. Real quick. Jesus said, you can't stop this, Pilate. You don't have the power to stop it. You don't have the authority to stop it. You have nothing to stop this. It's going to get carried out. Well, let God make that judgment. Yes.
I wanted to revisit the whole prison or the cost of a community having to provide this heifer. I think that we actually do, it costs us a lot to imprison people. And it's also, we have a lot of innocent people imprisoned. So the whole justice system is skewed because we aren't able to...
Now, the prisons are kind of a weird thing. In ancient days, you never had prisons. At all. You dealt with the thing, and the person had to pay for it himself, quick and fast. He was not thrown in prison at all. That is by the laws of God. What happens if you steal an antelope? Now, if you steal an ox, you had to pay three oxes back. If you steal a sheep, you got to pay seven of them back. You're not killed because it's not a sin unto death. Now, Apostle, right off hand, I think it was James. No, it was John. But he talked about praying for people and talking to people. But if they have sinned unto death, stop it. Don't pray for them. Let it happen. Man, a Christian would say that? You know, there comes a point where the person has to pay the penalty.